Welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host. And as always, I'm glad you've joined us. There's a line that President Joe Biden likes to use that I think says a lot about something that's going on in our state right now. He says, "Don't tell me what you value. Show me your budget, and I'll tell you what you value." Now, I'm not setting up the show to talk in praise or criticism about the president at this moment, but I do think that line appropriately assesses an important dimension of our politics. You may value one thing, but where are you putting your money? What are you doing to prioritize things with your dollars? Michigan's government just reached a budget deal last week that amounted to almost $77 billion. Education, special local projects, infrastructure work, all of them seem to get some of the biggest chunks of the budget. They were the priorities. But this still leaves questions, a lot of questions, about why these things got money, what things got left out, and what may need priority in the future. Of course, there are also a lot of politics involved here. We have a Democratic governor and a legislature that's controlled by the other party, Republicans. That often means that there's a lot of argument over the budget. The two parties have really different priorities in terms of how and where to spend money. But it was notable, I think, last week that both sides seemed to be walking away from these negotiations in pretty good spirits. The governor got a lot of things that she wanted, and I think legislative leaders would say the same. So what's going on, and what does this mean for those of us who live here, who are the beneficiaries, of the money that gets spent by state government? That's where we want to begin the conversation today, talking about the budget. What's in it? What's prioritized? And how that affects our lives here in Michigan. And to help us sort through all of that, we've got Zach Gorchow. He is the publisher and executive editor of the Gongwer News Service in Lansing. Zach, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Morning, Stephen. It's good to be here.
So let's start with one of the things I just noted. I felt like when this concluded last week, both sides seemed pretty happy. I mean, nobody's getting everything that they want. Politics doesn't really work that way. But maybe more than in even recent years, it seems that there's a lot of satisfaction around the deal that was made here. Am I wrong in drawing that conclusion?
No, you're not wrong. I mean, when you have this unprecedented run-up in revenues, I mean, just billions and billions and billions of dollars beyond what the state had had until, you know, very recently, there's just so much money available that everybody should be able to go home pretty happy. And that's why I always felt, you know, there wasn't going to be some massive impasse on the budget, is there's just too much available to make too many, you know, to make everybody happy. So, and yet there's still $7 billion available on the balance sheet, which is an extraordinary amount of state revenue. It's almost half of what would constitute the general fund spending for the entire year. So, you know, there's still, more chapters to be written, but, it's very rare that you would see virtually every stakeholder group cheering and genuinely thrilled, as well as legislators in both parties, and that's what we have right now.
Yeah, the politics of this are still, of course, with us. I mean, there were things that our Democratic governor would like to do or would like to prioritize that the Republican legislature was not all that thrilled about. Talk about who, I guess, got more of what they might have wanted, or whose priorities maybe are most reflected in this budget.
Well, I mean, if you start with the basis that Democrats prefer a more activist government and generally would prefer to see greater increases, and Republicans tend to prefer, tax cuts and more restrained government spending. I think you'd have to say this is much more of a Democratic-oriented budget than a Republican-oriented budget. But that being said, Republicans in the legislature, most of them, like to spend money on their priorities, too. It's not like, in general, you're not seeing Republicans in the legislature looking to, you don't see them looking to slash and burn in good times. They've got ideas, too, on how they want to spend the money. So, probably if you had to look at it, the, most conservative spending item that's in there was an extra more than $1 billion put into the public school employee retirement system debt. That's been a big calling card for Republicans for a long time to pay that down more quickly. And so I believe the total commitment to paying down that debt this year is somewhere on the order of $3 billion with an additional $1 billion increase this year. I mean, that's an incredible move there to address debt. So that, I think, Republicans would say they're very, very happy about. And on the Democratic side, name a program, it's getting a significant increase. You look at everything from revenue sharing aid to local government, public universities, community colleges, K-12 schools especially. Not that Republicans don't like these things too, but these are areas where Democrats have been hollering for more spending much more loudly than the Republicans have on the whole. So you look at all those things, and like I said, there's something here for just about everybody, and unless you're of the mind that government really shouldn't be doing anything, but there's not a whole lot of people in the legislature who think that.
Yeah. So I saw last week a really interesting tweet from John Truscott, who was the spokesperson for former Governor John Engler and now is a principal of the Truscott Rossman PR and strategy firm. He congratulated the governor and the legislature on what he described as eliminating the gap, the budget gap in public school funding between districts, and said that it was the fulfillment of the promise of Proposal A, which of course was passed while Engler was governor and did set us on the road initially toward trying to eliminate that gap. I thought it was interesting because I guess I hadn't really thought of that issue in the context of Proposal A in a really long time. But I also hadn't really necessarily taken full account of how much progress this budget makes toward that goal. So I want you to talk just a little bit about education funding and the gaps that exist and what this budget does to address them.
So it's an extraordinary K-12 education budget. I mean, it's just huge investments and program, spending and programs all over the place. Public school leaders really couldn't be happier, it seems, with what happened. So they did, last year, the fiscal year we're in now, they were able to eliminate the gap in what we call like basic per pupil funding. Mm-hmm. This is the what they call the foundation that each school district gets per pupil. So if you go all the way back, to when Proposal A passed in 1994, there were very big gaps in what each district got per pupil. And it was all because of, the way the old property tax system worked. And Proposal A essentially set things on a course to narrow that gap, that districts should be funded equally by the state. And so finally last year, in large part because of this huge run up in revenues, that gap was finally eliminated and every district got from the state $8,700 per pupil. And, another substantial increase coming with the fiscal year that is about to start $450 per pupil. So every district will get $9,150 per pupil from the state. Now, there are a handful of districts, the number is escaping me right now, but I want to say something like 30 or 40 of them that are well above that threshold. We're talking like Birmingham Public Schools, Bloomfield Public Schools, the really, you know, higher income areas that, and this was a carve out under Proposal A, where these districts that were spending, you know, well over $10,000 per pupil at the time got to continue doing that they weren't brought down. They didn't lose all of the property taxes they were putting towards schools, so that they could keep doing what they were doing. So it's not 100% equity yet. There's still some districts out there spending a lot more, but there's no comparison where we are now versus yesteryear. There's far more equity in how schools are funded. Mm-hmm. And then you look at elsewhere in the budget, special education, huge changes. I mean, you know, that special education has become so vital. There's so many kids, you know, with IEPs, individualized education plans that provide them with accommodations to meet their educational needs in the classroom. And districts have been hollering for years that has to be funded much differently than it was. And they're going to get that this year. There's a huge increase and a huge change in the way special education is funded that I think districts will and students will feel. Another huge commitment in the multi-hundreds of millions of dollars toward toward mental health in schools. Sorry, there's so much. It's hard to keep track of it all. So, you know, helping schools, you know, to hire more counselors, more professionals. The issue there is there's a shortage of those workers, and, you know, there's concerns there aren't enough people in the pipeline to fill those positions. But nonetheless, there's going to be a lot more money available for that. Tons of money putting, you know, to go into security for schools to help pay for, better doors, to protect schools from the kinds of violence we've seen. A lot of money going into that. There'll be an infrastructure grant program. So, you know, a lot of school districts out there in lower property tax areas, because infrastructure, school buildings, is still reliant on local property taxes. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a poorer area that doesn't have very high, that doesn't have a lot of property tax revenue, you are in a world of hurt, because it's much harder to raise the money to deal with building needs. So there's going to be a grant program to help those districts in poorer areas. You know, if I live in East Lansing, it's relatively easy to raise a millage to pay for new school buildings. We have several beautiful new elementary schools. That's not possible in poorer rural and poorer urban areas. So this would be a big boost to them. So that, I would, you know, are some very high-level highlights there. You could probably fill up your whole show with K-12 budget, but I don't know that anyone wants us to do that.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's the thing that I think reaches closest to a lot of people's lives in terms of the way that, government spends money, the way that that schools are formed and structured and funded. I also want to talk about the expectation that there would be tax cuts along with that, with this budget. There were a lot of people saying, look, there's all this money in Lansing, and some of that could be passed on to residents in the form of tax relief. Republicans wanted that in one form. Governor Whitmer wanted it in another. But the deal between Whitmer and the state legislature kind of got punted. Talk about why that happened and what we might expect to see as far as tax cutting in the coming months, and whether that'll even happen before the election.
Well, I think there's a lot of doubt now whether that it happens before the election. If there was going to be momentum for the Republicans to want to get something done, I think it would have been before this primary, because a lot of the, you know, incumbent Republican legislators are in it up to their necks in primaries, and it would have been politically beneficial for them to have a big tax cut to take back home. But the legislature is not going to be back, I don't believe, in any meaningful way between now and the August 2nd primary. So then at that point, the Republicans have to ask themselves, you know, if we do a large tax cut, really the big beneficiary of that is going to be Governor Whitmer, who's standing for re-election. And, you know, they've already got, they've put two large tax cuts on her desk already that were, you know, were largely designed as they preferred. They adopted some of what she wanted, but the big calling card was a large reduction in the income tax rate, which the governor has resisted, and tends to benefit, you know, everyone gets the same rate cut, but in terms of the dollars tend to, you know, will flow more toward the higher income folks. You know, and I think it seems like election year politics is slowing that down now, that I think they're going to be reluctant now to sign off on something that's a huge tax cut, before the election. The governor prefers something that is more targeted and directed with larger amounts of tax cuts to those folks. And the Republicans are looking for something more overall where everybody gets something. You know, if the governor does win re-election, you know, then it really depends on whether what happens with legislative control, which party wins control of the legislature in the elections, on whether something might happen in lame duck. If the Republicans were to keep control of the legislature, you think you could see something happen in lame duck. You know, the leadership there might say, you know what, let's get something done now. You know, while we can be, you know, some legacy making kinds of things. But if the Democrats were to win one or both houses of the legislature, you know, especially if there's both, I would suspect then the governor will say, thanks, but no thanks. We're do what we want next year. So I think the path toward that is very clouded. That being said, they did maintain, as I said, $7 billion on the balance sheet with the idea some amount of that would be reserved for cutting taxes. So it's certainly possible. You know, and the other thing, too, if you're the Republicans, you're still thinking, hey, you know, maybe there, you know, if there's an outside chance we win the governorship, maybe. So, you know, you're thinking if whoever the Republican nominee is does beat Governor Whitmer, then they're thinking, hey, we're going to pass the tax cut we want next year, or, you know, some type of dramatic tax change. And we don't have to worry about making a deal with the governor. So I think there's a lot of moving parts based on where we're at right now. I don't see a lot of momentum anytime soon for a tax cut.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking with Zach Gorchow. He's the publisher and executive editor of the Gongwer News Service in Lansing. We're talking about the state budget deal that came together. $77 billion nearly that the governor and legislature agreed to spend on all kinds of things, schools, infrastructure, local projects. I want to hear from you about what your priorities are for state spending. Did you take a look at this budget and think, hey, that's a nice way to prioritize our money? Or did you take a look at it and think, what are they doing? I don't think we ought to be spending money on some of these things, or we ought to be spending more money on other things. Give us a call, 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page, put comments there, or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Again, 313-577-1019. Let's go to Bernadette in Old Redford. Bernadette, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen. So they think we're fools, Michigan residents. For example, they talk about gas tax cuts as a solution to high gas prices. What is having $5 a week more going to benefit us as opposed to the good that money could do collectively? Mental health, changing the economy. I'm glad that the legislators are doing something, but I don't feel like jumping for joy because they're finally doing some work.
They're finally doing some work. Bernadette, appreciate the call and that sentiment. Zach, what's your reaction to what she's saying there?
Well, I'm glad she mentioned the idea of a gas tax or sales tax on gas holiday, because that still, I think, if anything might yet happen, it would be that, and over an income tax change, you know, there'll be a lot of, even though the primary will be over, there's going to be a lot of people running for office because of these new maps and more competitive districts who would love to be able to say they're trying to do something about high gas prices. But your caller is right. I mean, you know, if you suspend, I think the state gasoline tax is about 27 cents per gallon right now. You know, everyone can kind of do the math on that. That's what, you know, maybe $5 a fill up at best, depending on the size of your car. You know, unless you're driving an ungodly amount of miles, that's not a whole lot of money back in your pocket. Granted, you know, what the price of gas right now, at least around here, is about $4.95 a gallon. Sure, would it be better to see it at $4.60 something? Yeah. But it's not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things. And then you have the sales tax on gasoline, 6% applied to whatever, you know, you're paying per fill up. And that comes out to about the same of money right now per gallon or so. So, you know, yes, you could see the sort of political momentum to suspend both of those. My guess would be probably for the rest of the year. They could say, hey, look, you know, the price of gas right now is, you know, much closer to $4 per gallon as a result. If, of course, the state service stations lower their prices accordingly, which, you know, they're not bound to do. I think most of them would. But, you know, it's certainly gimmicky. Yes, it would save folks some money at a time when everything else seems to be getting more expensive. But it's certainly not some silver bullet, you know, as to how it could be used otherwise. I mean, yes, they certainly could spend that money any number of other ways. But, you know, not many groups are going wanting in this budget, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Zach Gorchow, executive editor and publisher of Gongwer. It is always great to have you here to talk about state politics and all the other things that go on in Lansing. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Stephen. Good to be with you.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about politics in another context, Oakland County, and the upcoming primary elections. We have new districts. We have a county that is changing dramatically in terms of its demographics and its politics. We're going to have two folks with us who are pretty close to things in Oakland County to explain what's going on and what we should expect as we get closer to that primary election. Stay tuned for more Detroit Today.